The second case for oral argument this morning is Becky Grohlke, appellant, versus the Sioux Empire Federal Credit Union, appellee. For the appellant, we have Mr. Richard Casey, attorney from Sioux Falls, and Mr. Ryland Diner, also from Sioux Falls. Mr. Casey, I understand you'll be speaking this morning. And for the appellee, we have Mr. Eric Schulte, an attorney from Sioux Falls. Justice Sabres has disqualified himself in this case, and the court is very pleased to welcome back an old friend, a former justice of this court, the Honorable Robin Amundson, who will sit for Justice Sabres. Mr. Casey, you may proceed, and you have 20 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel. Good morning, Your Honors. This case presents the issue of whether an officer of an LLC in South Dakota can be sued for tortious interference with a contractual relationship by allegedly advocating out of his own personal interests that an LLC employee be fired for refusing to engage in fraud. It is appellant's position that the public policy of this state does, and indeed should, recognize such a claim. The LLC statute cited in our briefs establishes the standard of conduct for members and managers of an LLC, basically saying that their standard of conduct allows them to do everything except refrain from engaging in grossly negligent or reckless conduct, or intentional misconduct, or a knowing violation of law.
Is the LLC, just for me, there's a federal credit union or something in this. Is this a subsidiary of it or something?
This is a South Dakota LLC that's the defendant.
Well, how about, yeah, but the Empire Super Credit Union isn't here, but is this part of the Federal Credit Union or what?
No, they're related. They share an office, but they're different legal entities.
And this is some of the LLC is in the mortgage business.
That's correct, Your
Honor. Is this some of the subprime mortgages you read about day and age?
It is.
So what you're saying then is if you get into the facts of this case, maybe that did the mortgage brokers, they work on a commission maybe?
Yes.
So what you're trying to say is that if you can go in and show that the primary goal behind this officer was to get commissions by doctoring up applications for mortgages would be inappropriate, would be not the type of conduct that should be, immune from suit or what?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Well, you don't have to tell me it's correct, but I mean, is that basically where you're going or what?
Well, yeah, that you shouldn't be able to perpetrate fraud. You shouldn't be able to intentionally put misleading information, for example, in appraisals or whatever, into documents so as to qualify them for loans.
Going on all over the country, apparently.
What's going on, I guess, is that's our reality. It is what it is. But we shouldn't condone that somebody intentionally mislead, intentionally commit fraud, which is what is alleged in the four corners of the complaint that is here on a Rule 12b motion. We shouldn't allow that immunity to go to somebody because they happen to also be an officer of the corporation, somebody who is engaged in fraud, somebody who allegedly is intimidating somebody else that works there to go along with them.
So as part of the allegation, then, it's that by it is per se outside the scope of his employment, would you say, or is outside the scope of his officer status?
Absolutely. And to engage in that kind of behavior, Your Honor, brings with it consequences, potentially, that are very adverse to the LLC, all the way from civil lawsuits to criminal actions, potentially. And so they're inherently, it's something that is done for somebody's own interests, may be quite contrary to the interests of the entity.
So the trial court dismissed the action for failure to state a claim. Is that right?
That's correct.
So what are you asking us to do then? Procedurally, what would we be doing?
We would ask that you find that the trial court erred and reverse and remand it so that the plaintiff would be allowed to proceed on that tortious interference claim against Mr. Bednar.
But the trial court relied on prior decisions from this court, didn't he? And he specifically, as I look at in your brief, was talking about paragraph 35 of the Mueller decision, wasn't he? He was troubled with that.
The court was very troubled. That's very obvious from the excerpt you're referring to.
It kind of sounded to me like he said, well, we need some clarification. Because if the words on the end of that paragraph 15 would have been, we decline to recognize such a claim in this case, we wouldn't be here today, would we? Maybe not.
I think that the trial court was very troubled by that language, and I think that, frankly, that language it may mean that in this case we declined to go there, because there were no allegations that I could discern from reading that case, and of course that's all I have by way of the record, but I could find no language that really showed bad faith, or showed that the officer, or the directors, excuse me, of the corporation sued in the Mueller case were acting other than in their collective roles as directors. Clearly there was no triangle there.
They're acting just as the board of directors has decided not to keep this individual employed.
Exactly.
Which they're shielded under that theory, aren't they?
They are. And just let's be clear, Ms. Grulke in this appeal is not asking this court to overrule Mueller or overrule the Nelson Webb case. Neither of those cases involved allegations of fraud, as this case does. Neither of those cases involved an officer who was allegedly acting out of his personal interests as opposed to the best interests of the company.
We've been talking a lot about other cases. Where did the trial court go wrong in this case that you bring it to us now?
I think that, first of all, under a 12B analysis, the court's got to determine that beyond doubt there's no facts under which the plaintiff can prevail on this claim.
And you get the benefit of the doubt on that.
And the court was very torn, as is very obvious and cited in our brief, when he made his ruling. And he basically said, to me, if you read the transcript, he doesn't believe, he finds it hard to believe, I think, that anything said in Mueller extends as far as the allegations of fraud that are present in this case. And I think this court needs to clarify that they do not. It would be horrible public policy for an officer to be given a blank check to commit any kind of fraud and, moreover, to go and intimidate other people to play ball or leave in committing that same fraud. And that public policy, again, is enunciated, I think, in terms of LLCs in the statute that's cited in our brief. So I think it was dicta in Mueller. I think the language in Mueller that troubled the trial court wasn't matching up with the facts of Mueller. And I think the facts of Mueller compelled the decision that was made, but perhaps didn't compel the insinuation that it's a carte blanche, blank check situation given to officers of a corporation.
You know, South Dakota is a right-to-work state, which means for our purposes that people can be discharged at will. Your client was a contract worker. Do we open the door to a whole host of new lawsuits now that if we accept your argument, because now a person who's discharged can now sue the boss and say, well, the boss had purely personal motives in firing me, and now I want my cause of action, I want damages for that?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. For First of all, the at-will doctrine has exceptions, and public policy is one of the exceptions. And if in an at-will situation, forgetting entirely about a contract being involved, if an employer is trying to entice an employee into committing fraud, and if the employee refuses to do it, fires that employee, that is a recognized cause of action currently.
So you say that in order to sustain your cause of action, you're going to have to prove that there was fraud, or there was an inducement to fraud in order to succeed. Is that going to be an element in your cause of action?
I think it. Yes, I think that an element is fraud or false and misleading information, putting intentionally incorrect information, for example, into mortgage loan applications. That would be ultimately one of the elements that the plaintiff would have to prove at trial. But of course, we're not there in this appeal. We're not there in the motion that was before the trial judge, because we're limited in that motion and we're limited on this appeal to the four corners of the pleading. The four
I understand, corners but of if the, we if we recognize the cause of action that you're asking us to recognize, what are the elements going to be? What will a plaintiff have to show, A, B, C, in order to establish a cause of action for wrongful interference with an employment contract?
The plaintiff will have to show, Your Honor, that the reason she was terminated, or technically speaking, the reason that her contract was not renewed, was because there was intentional misconduct on the part of Mr. Bednar in trying to intimidate her into going along with the intent of falsely misrepresenting a certain information in loan applications, that she refused to do it, and therefore the contract was not renewed. Very similar to an at-will situation.
Does things have to be that he was trying to feather his own nest rather than the company? Would that be an element you'd look at?
You know, possibly, but when you look at the statute, the LLC statute, I don't even see the element in there per se of personal interest. As long as there's intentional misconduct that's shown on the part of that LLC member or officer, I don't think you need to necessarily go to that.
In some cases, there has been holdings, I think, in cases that say that if the individual is really more concerned about their own benefit than the company, that could be something that could be considered.
Right, and I think that's fundamentally what's driving this case. What brought this case into the courts was that personal interest, which creates the triangle that this court has talked about in numerous precedents.
How did he interfere with the contract? What did he do specifically? I know you talked about him asking her to commit fraud, but she didn't get fired by your client. She wasn't renewed by somebody else. How did the defendant get that done?
He enticed the supervisor of my client and the CEO of the LLC to not renew her contract.
And what did he do to entice? What is that? What's behind the word entice?
Just saying, you got to get rid of her. She and I don't get along. You got to get rid of her. I mean, we're going beyond the allegations of the complaint, mind you. But you know, the facts.
Of course, sometimes
do that. The facts, are that she wouldn't play ball. She told her supervisor she was being asked to do this, and she didn't want to be engaged in this behavior because she thought that it was purposely falsely reporting information just to get the loan. She didn't want to do that, and so she reported it more than one time to her supervisor, and Nonetheless, the management of the LLC sided with the COO, Mr. Bednar. He went over this mere employee, if you will, of the credit union.
Well, the concern then is this: if you only have to show that the supervisor said, "I don't get along with her. We're not seeing eye to eye," and if that person then convinces the other people in the company to terminate her, if that's all that's required to show or to state this cause of action, we're going to have, every time there's a termination, we're going to have a lawsuit brought in a company situation where they may not be seeing eye to eye for lots of reasons. But at the pleading stage, this case is going to go forward and subject companies to lawsuits simply because someone said, "I didn't see eye to eye with this employee," and so they convinced their boss to terminate him. Now, that's not good public policy either.
Well, and I beg to differ, Your Honor, that's all that's taken. I mean, that's all it's going to take. We have an allegation of fraud.
Okay.
We have an allegation of false and misleading information being demanded by the COO. We have the allegation that it is driven by his personal interests,
okay,
as opposed to the company's interests.
So your role would require, when Justice Koenigamp asked before, the elements would require fraud and personal interest as well?
Well, I believe they do to satisfy the triangle precedent that this court has established. I think, you know, it seems to me that you have to be able to show that there's personal interests that are outside of, and indeed perhaps contrary to, as I submit they were in this case, the interests of the mortgage company as part of the element. And then you have the misconduct that is intentional, or that is gross negligence or carelessness or a violation of law.
The problem is that I see here, in these kinds of cases, when someone gets fired, it's never just a pure business decision. You know, sometimes it's people don't get along. And so it's a mixed thing. Maybe the employee isn't working up to what the expectations, but also there's maybe a conflict of personalities. In South Dakota, people can be terminated for that, unless they have a contract or there's an exception. You know, the boss can say, it's just not working out with us. We don't get along. We don't see eye to eye. That's good enough right now in South Dakota by legislative fiat. The legislature said that's the law. But are we changing it now? Are we now creating another exception here where an employee can say, I know my boss didn't like all the work I did, but he didn't like me either. And so that's why I want to get my job back, or I want to get paid.
2 minutes.
Thank you, Governor. I don't believe that the court is opening the gates any further than it did when it established the public policy exception to the at-will doctrine and allows any former employee to file a suit and claim that even though they were at will, that they were terminated because they wouldn't engage in criminal conduct, for example. I don't think there's any difference.
And you did allege that in your complaint as well.
Yes.
The fraudulent part of it.
Yes. Fraud was alleged. False and misleading behavior was alleged. And I don't see any difference between what this court has recognized in at-will cases and the exception to the at-will doctrine in that regard and what we're asking for here. I think that's good public policy that we have in the at-will doctrine. And if the plaintiff properly pleads the allegation, they get past any 12B motion, then, of course, the next step is getting past a summary judgment motion if it's brought. But that is good public policy that this court established in the exception to the at-will doctrine. It is good public policy in this case to reverse the trial court and remand this case and allow this claim to proceed beyond the pleadings because of the same reason and because of the LLC statute. This is all consistent. We are not here to begrudge businesses making sound business decisions in good faith, you know, for example, under the good the business judgment rule. That is not what. That's not the way we see this case. We see this case on the face of the pleadings as very, very different from that, and much more akin to the exception to the at-will.
Now, we have to consider kind of the reverberations from a decision that you're asking us to make, and one might be the effect, the chilling effect on whistleblowers. You know, people that who may be disgruntled and may have some mixed motives, but say, I'm going to blow the whistle on what's going on in this place. And the whistleblower gets fired, or somebody else gets fired, and the whistleblower gets sued. Is that
well? That's
a concern.
That's right. I mean, I think the public policy that, that the court should be concerned about isn't doing anything differently than you're doing in the exception to the at-will doctrine. It is that, to the contrary, you give a blank check for any kind of wrongdoing on the part of a corporate officer for their own selfish interests. Because it's okay. Because
does it have to be purely? Would you, if you were drawing this rule that you, that you're asking us to adopt here for South Dakota, would you say that these interests that the defendant has in interfering with the contract have to be purely personal? There can't be a mixed. It can't be a mixed decision where somebody can say, well, I don't like them, and they're not a very good employee. Or does it just have to be purely selfish interests that apply?
I don't believe it has to be purely selfish interests. I think any time somebody, through their own interest, personal interests, puts the entity at risk and at exposure, either civilly or criminally or both, and the other elements that we've talked about are established, that's enough.
That's pretty pure then. I mean, because in human relations, are things ever that pure? Where the boss just has purely the business, totally the business concerns, and there isn't some element of abrasion or irritation that's going on, too, where the boss also says, you know, they're not doing a good job, and I don't like them. You know, now it has to be purely a business decision in order to avoid being sued.
Well, it has to be alleged that it's intentional misconduct, or a violation of law, or those gross negligence or recklessness under the LLC statute, because that's the standard of conduct that our legislature has embraced for LLCs.
And this your time has expired.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Schulte, you have 20 minutes.
May it please the court. Counsel, my name is Eric Schulte, and I represent the appellee, David Bednar, in this matter. I believe that the sole legal issue presented to this court on appeal is whether this court will recognize the tort of tortious interference with the business expectation under the facts as presented in this case. And I would respectfully submit to this court that under this court's prior precedent, the answer to that question is unequivocally no. This court does not recognize and has not recognized a cause of action for tortious interference of a business expectation, even in situations where it is alleged that the officer at issue was acting either in bad faith or outside the scope and course of employment. And before delving into the legal issue, I want to briefly touch on the facts of this matter and the appropriate standard of review. Mr. Casey has outlined, I believe, accurately what is alleged in the complaint in this case. Mr. Bednar vigorously denies these allegations, but under the appropriate standard of review, concedes that they must be accepted as true for this court's consideration with respect to this motion. But I think two facts are important to be looked at when analyzing the complaint. Initially, in paragraph 4, it is undisputed that Mr. Bednar is the chief operating officer of CU Mortgage Direct. That is undisputed. And also, it is undisputed that they are an LLC. He is an officer entitled to the protections afforded to him in a limited liability company. I believe that is significant when you look at the prior precedent that this court has established in the context of tortious interference claims. Specifically in the Landstrom case and subsequent decisions, this court has required that there need be a triangle in order for this cause of action to go forward. There needs to be the plaintiff, there needs to be an identifiable third party that the plaintiff wishes to deal with, and then finally, third, in order to make the triangle, There needs to be the defendant that was interfering somehow between the identifiable third party and the plaintiff. This court has instructed in the Landstrom case, in the Webb Water decision, and in the Mueller case, which the trial court focused here, that normally you cannot bring an action against a corporate officer or director for tortious interference because the triangle simply does not exist. There is not the three separate entities that you need to find. And the reason why is that a corporate officer or director simply cannot interfere with the contracts entered into by the corporate entity. There simply is no triangle, as has been required by this court. For that reason, Your Honors, I believe that the circuit court's decision dismissing this case should be affirmed.
So you're saying that because your client is the officer, he can't interfere?
That is correct, Your Honor.
Okay.
There is no triangle which would allow the interference at issue. And I think if you delve deeper into this court's case law...
Well, in Landstrom, there was no agreement. That was a critical thing in that case.
Yes, Your Honor.
Showing of an agreement that could be, you know,
yes,
interfered with.
Further in the Webb Water decision, which I think is important as well, which was decided by this court in 1993, a corporate director was terminated after his work was discussed at a public meeting. He subsequently brought suit against the corporation under various tort theories, including breach of contract, a breach of the duty of acting in good faith and in fair dealing, and also a tortious interference claim. This court specifically found in the Webb Water case that there was not a cause of action that could be possible for the tortious interference claim because there was not the triangle at issue, because this officer was suing other officers for tortious interference. Even though this court found that there were disputed questions of material fact concerning some of the other tort claims that were alleged, including the contract claims and the breach of the duty to act with good faith and fair dealing. And this court said, no, we are not going to recognize this claim in that particular context.
In any of those cases, was there any type of conduct that misrepresented a person's stature or financial condition so they could get a mortgage loan? None of those cases dealt with anything like that, did it?
That is correct, Your Honor. It did not deal with a mortgage loan as is at issue in this case, although there were slander allegations in the Webb Water case. But if you look forward to 5 years ago, with this court's ruling, unanimous ruling in the Mueller decision, Cedar Shores Mueller decision, in that particular case, I would respectfully disagree that there were no discussions about acting in bad faith. If you specifically look at paragraphs 20 and 21 of the Mueller decision, there are clear references to the minority shareholders in that case claiming that they were retaliated against for their conduct. And this court found, in a decision authored by Justice Gilbertson, that there were questions of fact as to whether or not the remaining shareholders in that particular case acted with good faith with respect to the plaintiffs. That
isn't good faith different than allegations of fraudulent behavior?
I think that the best workable standard that this court could adopt is the one that it already adopted in the Mueller decision. And I think that it should be considered synonymously in order to come up with a bright line rule that will be something that that future cases can be governed by. And that is what is stated in paragraph 35, Your Honor, which says specifically that this court declines to recognize a cause of action for tortious interference with a contract or business expectation, even when the officers at issue acted in bad faith or outside the scope of employment. I do not believe that that paragraph is dicta. I don't believe that there is any nuance to it. I believe, respectfully, that it was crystal clear. In that particular case, there was an argument by the plaintiffs where they were asserting tortious interference with a business expectation or contract expectancy. The plaintiffs in that particular case recognized this court's prior decision in the Webb Water case some years earlier, which said that corporate officers or directors cannot be sued for tortious interference because there is no triangle. Specifically, there was a request in the Mueller case to find an exception to that rule in situations where the officer or director acted in bad faith or outside the course and scope of their employment. And this court ruled, in I think very clear language, unanimously 5 years ago, that it was declining to recognize such a cause of action. Now, when we look at the trial court's ruling in this particular case, I think that it's something that the trial court
that was kind of a little family dispute in the Al's Oasis Cedar Shores case. Didn't have anything to do with any type of a fraudulent or deceptive loan applications or anything like that, did it?
It did not, Your Honor.
Okay.
That is correct. It did not. But there were allegations, I believe, that the opinion is looked at, which clearly talk about retaliation, acting in good faith or not. And the standard adopted by this court was that we will not allow this cause of action, even when you act in bad faith or outside the scope of employment.
Counsel, I know you're not going to like this question, but I don't know that means that the direction that I'm going, but I'd like to hear your answer to it anyway. You know, if we were to create an exception to this, because it looks to me like the restatement has a rule on it, and then a number of states have some exception to this rule. How could we narrowly draw it to protect people who are the victims of pure malice in cases like this?
I would, of course, wish that the court would rule consistently with the Mueller decision. I understand.
Understood.
But if it would be drawn, Your Honor, and if this court would make the decision to overrule its prior precedent, I think that it has to be done consistent with the cases from Texas and Hawaii that were cited at the end of my brief, which alludes to the question you asked Mr. Casey, which is it has to be alleged that the conduct was done solely for the benefit of the officer or director at issue, that there can be no benefit given to the corporate entity or to the LLC. And again, I don't think that that's a proper standard, but if this court would adopt that, I think that that's critical. If you look at the rationale of those decisions include cases that dismissed a complaint for failure to state a claim because there was no specific allegation in the complaint that the officer at issue was acting solely for his own personal benefit. And the complaints were dismissed. The courts say in those cases that the reason why that is critical that you do that is because it needs to preserve the triangle concept that this court has enunciated. Because if you are acting both for the corporate entity and you're acting for yourself, you're still acting for the corporate entity. And an officer, again, can't interfere with the contracts made by the corporation. So that's why those courts say that you have to do that. But my concern
is the allegation here, does it include that allegation that you just mentioned?
It does not. There is not an allegation found in the complaint that Mr. Bednar acted solely for his own personal agenda. And quite frankly, if you look at the briefs in response to that argument that I've made, the sole response that has been submitted by counsel for appellants is that that is not necessary because we are a notice pleading state. That is the one argument that is brought before this court.
So
and
the allegation then would have to involve some kind of activity not associated with the corporation or the LLC.
It would need to
survive under that theory.
Yes, Your Honor. Under the decisions in Texas, Hawaii, and Colorado that we've cited, it needs to be crystal clear that it is solely for the benefit of the defendant officer. My concern is that if this would be adopted, to allude to the questioning of Justice Zinner, is that it would open floodgates to additional litigation if you would merely allege in a complaint that the firing or termination, what have you, was done for simply personal reasons. And that could simply open the floodgates to additional litigation, and I think it would radically change the case law that has been adopted by this court in the past in these types of situations. Now, to be clear, in this situation, I'm not arguing to this court, and we haven't argued to this court, that a cause of action cannot proceed against the employer at issue. In fact, it is proceeding. Those are continuing on. But if you look specifically at the allegation here, this is an allegation against the individual officer, in addition to the allegation against the employer. In effect, where the plaintiff gets to make the same arguments but have additional defendants and seek additional damages. Now, this court has steadfastly guarded against that in its prior precedent, and if you look specifically at this court's ruling in Webb Water, the phrase that was used was that it would be dangerous doctrine to allow lawsuits of this nature to go forward and proceed because it would put under a microscope every discussion about employment and employment-related matters in a lawsuit. Now, as Mr. Casey argued, or didn't argue, but stated to this court, the reason why there was an interference with a contract at issue here was because there was advocating for Ms. Gruelke's termination. If you look at the complaint, I believe the specific word is advocated termination, and there is a phrase in the complaint which says that Mr. Bednar and Ms. Gruelke did not see eye to eye. That's the exact language that was used. Now, if that's merely alleged as a mechanism to allow a lawsuit to go forward, simply because you allege that you didn't see eye to eye and you allow a lawsuit to go forward, I think that that's bad public policy. I think that that would open the floodgates to additional litigation.
So you're advocating really that we stick with or clearly adopt the triangle requirement?
I am, Your Honor. Yes, I am, and rule consistently with the Mueller decision. Now, roughly 2 weeks ago, 2 to 3 weeks ago, the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals interpreted South Dakota law on this various issue in the Hone versus Spurgeon decision, which has been submitted to this court. The Eighth Circuit, handling a decision by Judge Simcoe, ruled that under South Dakota law and the precedent that's been established by this court, an officer or director is immune from suit for tortious interference, even if that officer or director acted in bad faith or outside the scope of employment. So I think that it is.
They're really just guessing what we're going to do.
I would respectfully disagree with that characterization. I understand they're interpreting South Dakota law, but it was based upon paragraph 35 in the Mueller decision.
Right, and we have to deal with that as well.
Yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
But they did reverse it, too.
They did.
Because there was a question whether or not he's an officer or employee.
That is correct, Your Honor. The ruling in that particular case was there was a question of fact as to whether or not the physician at issue was either an employee or a corporate officer. And what the Eighth Circuit ruled was that if he is an officer of the corporation, he would clearly be immune from suit.
So there's no dispute that your client's an officer in this case, so that wouldn't even apply then, that aspect of that case.
Correct, Your Honor. And again, in paragraph 4, it's undisputed that he is the chief operating officer of the LLC.
Mr. Schulte, I really hate to take away from the important substantive arguments in this case, but there's a procedural issue that's been bothering me. It really wasn't briefed, and you meant it came to my attention just a moment ago when you said the cases against the other two are proceeding. Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
You know, I've kept wondering how this appeal got this far. Even though there's been a 54B certification, the trial judge just parroted the statutory language, and our cases don't permit that kind of 54B certification to allow this kind of an appeal to proceed as a matter of right.
Okay. I can state, Your Honor, that there was, and I frankly did not prepare on that issue, to be candid with the court coming in today.
And I fully acknowledge that. I understand that.
That there was an agreement among counsel at the time, I believe also counsel for the credit union, among the trial court, among Mr. Casey and myself, that we wanted this issue to be heard immediately and then to not prolong the litigation, so discovery has continued and it has gone on. We did our level best to have the order issued properly. I can state that.
Well, the court also seemed to say he wanted it done that way.
Yeah, yes, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor, it did. Now, I would like to address in the time I have remaining Mr. Casey's arguments concerning the LLC statute, which he has brought before you. Now, Mr. Casey has quoted in his brief SDCL 47-34A-409, specifically sub C of that statute. And with all due respect, I don't see how that particular statute could impact an analysis of a tortious interference claim against an LLC. That statute talks about the duty of members in an LLC and how they should conduct themselves, and it talks about a negligence standard and other standards. If that would somehow be adopted, my concern, and I don't know how it could be adopted, but would that entitle lawsuits to happen against corporate officers if they acted negligently in advocating for the termination of an employee? I mean, I just simply do not know how that would translate into a tortious interference claim. In addition, Mr. Casey has cited the Kansas Gas case and other cases dealing with the piercing of a corporate veil in his brief to this court. Piercing a corporate veil has not been pled in this particular case. This court has instructed that I believe 7 or 8 factors need to be met to pierce the corporate veil, and I would just respectfully submit that that's comparing apples to oranges. I think that this court needs to focus on the criteria for tortious interference claims, and I do not believe the LLC statute has any particular application. I think it's also important, too, when examining the facts of this case, to look at the specific allegations that are made in the complaint. We've been arguing as if it's assumed that there's an allegation that Mr. Bednar was acting outside the scope of employment or was engaging in bad faith. If the four corners of the complaint are examined, however, there's not a specific reference to the phrase outside of employment, outside of the scope of employment, or acting in bad faith. Those phrases simply are not used in the complaint, and I think it's significant if an attempt is made to get beyond the Mueller decision, that that should be specifically what is alleged. Now, I also think that it's significant when the case is examined.
2 minutes, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor. If you look also at the allegations in the other two counts in the complaint that are not against Mr. Bednar, I think the only fair reading of this complaint is that plaintiff is attempting to hold liable the employer based upon the conduct of Mr. Bednar, in effect saying that he was acting in the course and scope of his employment, and they're trying to hold liable the employer based upon Mr. Bednar's conduct. I would specifically refer the court to counts 1 and 2 and specifically paragraph 12 of the complaint. I would respectfully submit that the way that the complaint is pled, the only fair way to read it is that there's not a claim that you're acting outside the course and scope of your employment, but in effect, Mr. Casey is attempting to argue that he was inside the course and scope of his employment, and he's attempting to hold the employer liable for Mr. Bednar's conduct. Now, I think that that's significant because it allows the best of both worlds, where plaintiff's counsel can say that Mr. Bednar was not in the course and scope of his employment, but then at the same time say that he was, so that the employer can be held liable based upon his conduct.
So you're saying the counts are inconsistent?
Well, I think what I'm saying is that in the complaint, it doesn't specifically say that there was conduct outside the course and scope of employment or bad faith. And my reading of the complaint is that under counts 1 and 2, Mr. Casey and the plaintiff is attempting to hold the employer liable based upon Mr. Bednar's conduct.
And those are still going forward, those cases.
They haven't been dismissed
or summary judgment or anything.
That is correct, Your Honor. They're still going forward at the present time.
Our rules permit inconsistent pleadings.
I understand, Your Honor, that it can be inconsistent, but I think when you're looking at a motion to dismiss for failure to state a claim, if you look at the four corners of the complaint, and if it's not specifically alleged that it was bad faith or outside the course and scope of employment, this case is clearly barred by the 1993 Webwater decision.
Your time has expired, Mr. Schulte.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Casey, you have 10 minutes, sir.
May it please the court and counsel. With reference to, first of all, getting back to the standard that was facing the trial court was a 12B motion to dismiss standard, which is to look at the allegations of the complaint and determine that it's beyond doubt that a plaintiff cannot recover under any facts provable in support of the claim.
But to get there, we really do have to rule that you don't need the triangle, correct?
Well, I don't think so, Your Honor, but because, and I think that the triangle, which is a result of somebody acting in their own interest contrary to the interests of the entity, that creates a triangle. I think that's part of the standard of conduct that our legislature envisioned in the LLC statute when it talked about, for example, intentional misconduct or a knowing violation of law. I mean, inherently, if somebody is acting as an officer of an LLC out of their own selfish interests, exposing the LLC to criminal or civil liability, that is intentional misconduct.
But if the allegation is that it deals with the business of the LLC, how can you ever get the third triangle, or the third leg of it, the third part of it? I mean, if it was something outside the scope of his employment, her employment, that might be true, but there is nothing in this, what you're alleging, that would create an outside entity or a substitute for one.
Well, I respectfully disagree, Your Honor, in that I think the allegation shows that this was a personally motivated, wrongful, false, and misleading activity that Mr. Bednar was engaged in potentially violated the law, and by so doing, he stands to personally gain by his commissions that he would earn off of this loan that would be approved, containing false information.
Are you saying that when he acts outside the scope of what you say he is officer is to do, he's acting independently? So there he is in that part of the triangle, and then there's the company, and then there's your client. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yes. That.
I don't know. I just tried
to. There you get the three, because he's motivated, according to the allegations, he's motivated by his own interests, which may not be, and in fact are contrary to the interests of the entity.
Life is rarely that black and white. There's usually a lot of shades of gray mixed in there. What do you do in the case where the corporate officer says, "Well, I was protecting the corporation. I might have had my own motives, but I was looking after their interests." Does that make the triangle go away?
Again, I think you have to analyze it in the context of the legislature's standard of conduct. Is it intentional misconduct?
When was the LLC statute passed?
When was it passed?
Before or after Mueller?
Before the Mueller case, I believe.
Okay. Does that have any significance?
Well, Mueller didn't involve an LLC. It wasn't an issue raised in Mueller. It wasn't an issue raised in Nelson. It is an issue raised in this case. Just like the allegation of fraud wasn't raised in those cases. What the court said with respect to corporations and what the court said with respect to bad faith in the Mueller case, that begs the question in a case such as this, where there's a greater scienter alleged, that being fraud. So again, Mr. Schulte indicates that we're going to open the floodgates. I'm just going to briefly reiterate what I said the first time I was up here, which is that I don't see that. What we're asking is simply consistent with the exception to the at-will doctrine. Mr. Schulte referred to the allegation in the complaint that my client and the officer did not see eye to eye. And so anytime somebody doesn't see eye to eye and they get terminated, this is going to allow the lawsuit to proceed. And I don't agree with that at all. The eye-to-eye allegation pertained to the breach of contract claim in the complaint. And the significance of that is simply that there was a contract that called for a severance payment to be made if my client, if the contract was terminated without cause. And we alleged in count two that was a termination without cause of the contract because she was simply terminated for not being able to see eye to eye with Mr. Bednar. I don't see that as being relevant at all to what's before this court and the consideration of the tortious interference claim. It just happens to be in the same complaint. The floodgates are not going to be open. What we are advocating here is consistent with public policy pronouncements of our legislature, with public policy pronouncements of this court with respect to piercing the corporate veil, which is only relevant from that standpoint of looking to public policy and saying what is consistent with it and what is not. And we're saying it is consistent that no officer of a corporation and certainly no officer of an LLC should have a blank check in being able to do anything they darn well please in the name of, or just because they've got the title of officer. That is not a license to commit fraud and try to entice or intimidate other employees of the entity to commit fraud because they stand to personally gain by it.
Is there an allegation in your complaint that alleges that that the officer here acted solely for the benefit of the officer?
No, there is not. And again, as I indicated earlier, I do not believe that is a necessary element of proof for the reasons that I stated. But it is not in the complaint, Your Honor. So, again, unless there are other questions, I would simply ask that, I guess there's nothing simple about it, but I'm asking this court, in conclusion, to reverse the trial court and to remand this matter to reinstitute count three of the complaint because I think the public policy of the state demands that be so. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Dacey. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.